I love the way the Northern Europeans, particularly the Scandinavians, do their adult education. For those of you who don't know, the system for adult learning in Europe is based around the Grundtvig program. Grundtvig was born in Denmark in 1783. He believed that universities should educate students for active participation in society and popular life. And he promoted freedom such as you can see, freedom, cooperation, discovery, wisdom, compassion, identification and equality. I don't see those words in Australian universities. Not many of them. And he also opposed educational compulsion, including exams, as deadening to the human soul. And the folk high school movement in Scandinavia, I just love what it does, where it actually downplays the assessment and brings out the ideas of learning through cooperation in communities of practice, which makes a huge amount of sense. The hard thing in terms of adult education is that we have a range of factors that put adults in Australia off formal and accredited learning that can keep them unwell and out of work and also exacerbate existing inequalities. I'm not going to read them to you, but these are the sorts of things that can cut across people learning. There's another piece of work that I've come across, and I reviewed this for a journal recently. It's a book of over 84 chapters and over 1,000 pages. It's called Mental Capital and Wellbeing. If you've got a spare $400 or you've got access to a library, go and have a look at it. They are the sections in the book. The second section is called Learning Through Life, edited by John Field from University of Stirling. But it's the most, it's the wildest ride of evidence-based research about all of these things. And some of the findings in that book I'm going to pull out in the slides that follow. There's a whole lot of research being done about how learning can actually address many of the issues that occur for people through brain development in earlier life. It's not an area I know a lot about, but the more you read from emerging research, the more you come to realise that life-wide and life-wide learning in communities of practice actually makes a lot of sense. The book in particular stresses basically saying, and this is an argument for continuing an adult education, and this is based on the data, it says it's increasingly important to maximise the potential mental capital trajectory through life for two reasons. The first one is about ensuring that the greatest number of older people in Australia, in this case, maintain the best possible mental capital and preserve their independence and well-being. It's a really, really strong argument, and it's also an economic rational argument, because it would save governments huge amounts of money if more of us in an ageing society are more independent and weller for longer, and they would save heaps of money. But the second important point, and Cooper and others in their book stress this, is to ensure that the considerable resource that older people offer is actually recognised and valued by society, and that they have the opportunity to maximise the maximum benefit both for themselves and for the wider community. And so it's not just about individuals looking after themselves, it's about the accumulated wisdom and knowledge that exists in so many older people that's actually transferred to other generations. I thought at this stage I was probably getting a bit bleak. I don't need to say anything. There are other ways of thinking about the world. This was in The Age just recently, and a friend alerted me to it. I just had to throw it in. Cooper go on to talk about continuing education. And basically they say that, and this is based on the evidence, it's not just exhortation. They review, it's one of the most reference books I've ever seen. There are tens of thousands of references in the book. And they conclude that education has important benefits in terms of mental and physical health. It's about self-esteem, it's about social interaction, it's about activity. But the difficulty is, and the difficulty, this is, although this is written in the UK, this is the identical problem we have in Australia, is that the majority of those entering older age in Australia have had little education since attending school many decades earlier. If we look closely at the stats, one third of the adult population have had no formal episodes of learning at all since school leaving age. In Australia, half of adults in work today have finished no course since they left school. One third of adults in Australia are functionally illiterate, and the rate of functional illiteracy increases with age, such that by the time people are 75, 75% of the Australian population can't actually engage with the modern day community because they don't have the skills to do that. That's scary. And it's a big argument for lifelong learning and life-wide learning. It's worse in terms of health literacies. 6 out of 10 in Australia don't have basic health literacies. That means we can't actually read and understand a medicine bottle. It's scary stuff. So my question is, and I'm not going to answer it now, why is this so? And what should be done about it? I'll just do a time check. How long have I got? Okay, I'm okay. We often talk about barriers, and one of the things I really love about Cooper and others' work is that they actually set out to demolish the ideas that somehow we provide adult education and all we have to do is help people climb over the barriers to get into it. And they actually look really closely at the notion of barriers and actually basically analyse that once you take a whole lot of issues like age, sex and family background into account, that there's actually not enough variation left for barriers to make any difference to participation. And what they're actually saying is that, and I've put it in italics in the last sentence in the second dot point, we need to revise our ideas that the existing setup for learning is appropriate for all and that the reluctant learner need only be lured back on track. And it's often easy to think that these things are impossible, but the evidence this week is that the 1,000th men's shed was opened in the world this week. There's 857 men's sheds in Australia. Now, if someone had said to me or you 5 or 10 years ago that older men could exercise agency to create a movement which completely transformed themselves and their communities, I would have said bullshit. It's happened. There's also 100 sheds in Ireland. Now, I'm not saying men's sheds are the answer to the world, but the model that they've used is fascinating. It's about agency. And it's not about actually teaching, it's not about programs, but it's very, very powerful and it's community embedded. And Helen and I think, where's Helen? Helen and I wrote a paper a few years ago in the Australian Journal of Adult Learning, which I'm not saying it's the best article ever, but it's actually becoming more interesting with time. We wrote our article called Houses and Sheds, where we actually identify some parallels between the birth and growth of the neighbourhood house movement, largely by feminist women in the 1970s, and the growth of men's sheds in recent years, not by masculinist men, but just by blokes that read nothing. so there's some similarities and differences, but it's certainly worth thinking about why this occurs. I'd like to just try pulling it together and say I think we need to realise that barriers aren't a good way of talking about adult education. And I'm not going to read this because it's quite complex, but I love the second dot point, where, and this is one of my arguments against a lot of formal education, is that educators do not select their potential students nor their employers, their employees, on the basis of their socioeconomic status, ethnicity or age, as this is both unfair and illegal. However, they do select them on a suitable variable, prior education, that sums up and is very heavily correlated with such background factors. And they ask, what is a sense in that? And yet that's the sense that we operate by in terms of our selection to post-school education. There are frameworks for dealing with this stuff. I like the Australian Communication Skills Framework, which actually argues that adult learning needs to be more relational. And so there are ways of even using existing formal VET frameworks, and I'm not bashing VET here, but I'm saying there are actually frameworks we can use which actually lead us to help people express their identity, interact in groups, do stuff together, and do stuff with the community. There's also the World Health Organization Determinants of Disadvantage framework, which I actually think that suggests that adult learning needs to be lifelong and life-wide. And I'd argue that one of the reasons why Men's Sheds work so powerfully is because they actually deal and directly address many of these things rather than actually teaching stuff. The other thing we need to think about to pull it together is that we need to, I would argue, change the way we fund adult education. Again, this is stuff that comes out of the UK research. This is the way that people in the UK spend money on their age groups. And so 86% of the education budget is spent on people between 1 and 25. And yet the people in the 70 to 75 and 75 plus demographic are the quickest growing cohorts in most nations in the world. And so the question is, I'm not suggesting we spend 86% on the 75-year-olds, but I'm just saying, how well are these age categories catered for in Australian adult education and training sectors? Do we actually think about this? Is this equitable? Is this sensible? Is this economically rational in terms of outcomes? And this is my second last slide for those of you who are starting to glaze over. I think we shouldn't just say that we need more learning. And one of the problems with a slogan like life-wide and life-wide learning for all, it sounds like a sort of a sentence, a life sentence. You're going to have to keep learning for life or else. A lot of the research myself and others have done has shown that we actually do need to learn more as we get older rather than less, because change comes quicker as we age. If you take as an example the fact that half of people in aged care homes have got dementia, even learning to cope with dementia is a really difficult thing for an individual, but also difficult for the family members. And these are real issues that are happening in Australia today. This slide's basically arguing that we have to actually not just say we need more learning, because if we actually had a learning system based only on markets, we'd end up with further diminishing the status of people who are poor, unskilled, and unqualified or beyond paid work. And I would argue that's the direction we're heading in many places in Australia. We're actually exacerbating the existing inequalities. So this is my final slide. It might sound a bit bleak, but hey, I think it's a question. We acknowledge that poverty is directly associated with ill health. Many of our social problems derive directly from the fact of inequality. And all of us actually are poorer from living in an unequal society. And one of the reasons why I think ALA and other organisations need to keep saying the market is not the answer, certainly not the market that's being foisted on us by some states and by national governments over recent decades, is that inequalities in education accentuate inequalities in poverty and in health rather than reduce them in an already unequal society. So if that's a bit bleak, I just think it's important to acknowledge that this is where we start. By the end, when we have Alan Tuckett, I think hopefully Alan's got some answers for us. Is Alan here at the moment? Not here yet. Okay. I met Alan at the ASPE conference in Phnom Penh 2 weeks ago, and I'm really looking forward to him speak. And I'm sure he'll... I'm not sure he'll have all the answers to all of these questions, but I do think they have a much better evidence base in the UK. And I guess my last thing, without sounding like I'm just pissing in my pocket because I'm a researcher, but we need better research in Australia to show what's actually happening. So thank you.